Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 20th of June, recording at 9:15 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's have a quick review of the week, as I usually do. For stock markets, well, it was pretty grim. Unrelenting selling pressure, for the most part. All stock markets were hit, as far as I'm aware. The resources markets held up best, notably the Canadian market. Now, in long-dated government bonds, they have been steady to firmer this week, not surprisingly, against the background of that weak stock market activity. The U.S. dollar has slipped. It had pushed up through the upper side of its trading range, I think it was on Monday or Tuesday, but has fallen back subsequently and was down again today. It's hovering just above 70.73. That's still in the upper middle of its range of the last few months, though. And in other activity here, crude oil, that's been so volatile recently, still volatile today, although less than in recent days. So we had sort of a $5.50 range, got up to 136.80 and down to 131.19 last. I think it went down first and then up, currently at 134.62. So that's a couple of dollars off its high of the day. And the metals were firm in here. We've had copper's been strong all week. That's been the leader here, but aluminium has been strong as well, and tin has certainly firmed. Zinc has firmed a bit, but they're all up today. Now, this week we've also seen at least short-term peaks in the grain and bean complex following their upward accelerations. And that may also be the case with sugar, although it was a lesser move in sugar. Less of a bandwagon effect overall, I should say. The spike upwards was pretty persistent. And the big story in the soft commodities here today was an upside breakout by coffee. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, in terms of stock markets, there is no good news in terms of the fundamentals. They've been relatively grim. You could be forgiven for feeling that this is a perfect storm for stock markets, because first we had the credit crisis, and then just when we seem to be beyond the nadir of that doesn't mean that it's over. The problems and ramifications of that will rumble on for a very long time, as we know, and have affected the housing market. But that was largely a crisis in the West. What has been more serious that has happened more recently was, of course, the spike in oil prices. And that still has people spooked, not least governments and central banks. And then, of course, we had late last year and in the beginning of this year, we had the spike in agricultural commodity prices. And those accelerated to highs and looked quite overextended and due for a setback, which they were getting. But in the perfect storm category, literally, we had the devastating weather in the U.S. Midwest, and that just ignited corn, most of all, but soybeans, but the sentiment spilled over into the entire sector overall. So really, and then going back to, I'm still talking about equities, of course, but that was a big headwind. The crude oil price is the most dangerous one. It's something I've mentioned for many, many months that I was concerned about. Then we had, of course, the bank shares leading again on the downside. And then there's all the talk about this slower GDP growth and downgrades of corporate profits. So really, we've had wave after wave after wave of events thrown at stock markets. And no wonder they're weak in here today. Well, is there any respite in all this? Very interesting. I published yesterday that Merrill Lynch survey of investor sentiment, which they said was more bearish than what we saw at the beginning of this decade, in that 2000-2002 bear market phase. Today, in comment of the day, I haven't posted it yet, but because I haven't completed the formatting, but I will be posting for your perusal over the weekend the Investors Intelligence Advisors sentiment readings, and those are very interesting. Veteran subscribers will not be surprised to hear that sentiment is extremely negative. Newer subscribers should know that that is, well, I should explain to new subscribers that that is a contrary indicator. And if it's true sometimes that a picture is worth a thousand words, this picture really is in terms of the graph that they produce there, and basically what it shows, and I've posted this before on Fuller Money, is that we've got a quite oversold reading now on that investor sentiment index, and that has been incredibly accurate, as you will see if you look at the graph. So when people say, well, is the market overbought, or is it oversold, or is the selling climactic, and so on, and what about the chart patterns? Well, it's there, there's a, the interpretation of all that can be very, very subjective. But when you look at this this graph, which goes back a good many years, you'll see at least 10 years data on the graph. And I know these people have been running it for a lot longer than that. It has picked up all the bottoms. It's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons why I like sentiment indicators for denoting market bottoms. Now, what we don't have is as oversold a reading as we had back in March. That was an extreme reading. We had a more panicky sell-off back then, also in January, but this is a pretty significant reading. And based on the evidence on that chart, I mean, my feeling is that we're within a fortnight, and that means it could be Monday, it could be 2 weeks from now, but we're within a fortnight, my guess is, of an important low. Now, is that the low? I have been concerned for a number of weeks by the downside leadership of the banks. That really did dent my confidence about that overall bottoming out and base building phase, although it doesn't necessarily mean that the S&P and the leading European indices wouldn't hold near their January and March lows, but I would regard breaches of the January and March lows for more than a very brief period as ominous. So it in the sense of indicating that they were just reinforcing the downtrend and the bear markets that exist. Not all of these stock markets are in bear markets, as you know. The number of the well, most of the resources markets show a very, very different picture. But the Wall Street leash effect, needless to say, rules right now. That's what's dominating pretty much everything here. But to say it's an intriguing time analytically, if you can appreciate that, and I trust you can, to have the investor advisor's sentiment readings and pretty well any other sentiment reading showing some very oversold conditions here at a time when a number of the major indices are approaching those January and March lows. The Dow is very, very close, for instance, but that's led on the way down. Then you have others like the transports, which were up right up near their all-time highs. But the S&P is the big one, and that is within striking distance of its January and March lows, although not as close, as I say, as the Dow. Neither is the Nasdaq. The Nasdaq has been a considerable outperformer. Oh, what about Japan? I've said it's an ideal market for these conditions on a relative basis, but I've also said that it can't do it on its own. So that's going to be sucked down, and I would have thought that Japan will break its progression of rising lows since the March low, as so many other indices have. Japan's one of the last holdouts among the non-resources industrialized markets. But I s would also feel, though, that Japan would will be a leader on the upside over the medium to longer term, on the basis that it has the lower inflation, it's the most efficient user of energy, and it doesn't have people always talk about Japan's demographic problems, and it does indeed have demographic problems, which there are now murmurings that it will be addressing over the next few years. It will obviously take time, but they're going to allow more people in. But the plus side of that, in an environment when poorer countries are getting food riots, is that that's not going to happen in Japan. So you don't have teeming hordes of hungry people in an underclass who need to be helped. So again, I think Japan will do overall. It will do quite well overall. But the big development here, as I say, is we need to see evidence of a climactic low, and I expect to see that within the next fortnight. Now, going back to that Investors Intelligence Sentiment Advisory Sentiment Advisors Index, our Advisor Sentiment Index. It's a Friday and it's late in the day here, but hang on there. Hang in there. I will attempt to as well. But getting back to that, the important question is, does it work in an overall bearish stock market environment? And the answer is yes, as you will see on that graph. That's why I'm pretty confident that we will get a rebound here quite soon. Well, what will be the catalyst? I don't know. It could be a lower oil price. It could be some statement from the central banks. They will be wondering about this over the weekend and be a bit concerned, I suspect. But as far as the fuel is concerned, have a look at the chart of the short interest that Owen is posting today, because that's at record highs, that New York Stock Exchange short interest. Now, excuse me, we know that there are plenty more hedge funds and big prop desk traders, so that would push that figure up. But that doesn't invalidate the importance of that. The rising short interest is one of the reasons why we are getting tests of the lows for these indices, and it is also a source of fuel for that next rally, and the rallies always start with short covering. Okay, well, what about the long-dated government bonds? I think that they will remain steady while stock markets are very weak, but probably come off as stock markets rally once again. What about the I don't like the bonds on a long-term basis, as you know, and I think the patterns are really quite bearish. If you look at the bond prices, they show huge type 3 top areas. If you look at I'm talking about long-dated government bonds now, and if you look at the yields, you see huge long-term developing base formations. Yields are not attractive. There's too much supply. You've probably heard me say that before. What about the currencies? Well, the crowd's been pretty optimistic as far as the US dollar is concerned recently. I don't really buy into that. What I have bought into over the last 3 months is a trading range following the last acceleration down to lows near the I think just below the 71 level on the US dollar index. We would see a sideways trading range. So that's been a rare patch of stability in recent weeks. Currencies have not been a concern, but the US isn't going to be raising interest rates anytime soon. That's just bluff on the part of Bernanke. I'm sure he'd love to be able to raise interest rates, but not with unemployment going up and with the economy very, very weak. And there, but for the grace of the global economic expansion, it would be in recession. And therefore, we're not going to see any higher interest rates. The interest rate differentials are negative. You have wealthy Asian countries from Japan to China holding far more dollars than they want. You've got the oil exporters holding far more dollars than they want. So I think the best we get here is a bit of respite. But that said, if you look at the chart of the US dollar index, you see it's mostly ranging, but it ranges with slightly higher highs and slightly higher lows. So to firmly indicate that the dollar isn't going to do anything significant on the upside, we would need to see that dollar index drop back down below the 72 level. I would not be at all surprised to see that. I've said before that even if the dollar has commenced a long-term bottoming out phase, I'm far from convinced, but it may have, because it has had such a big fall over a lengthy period, that it would take a long time for the reasons that I've just mentioned. Resources have been an amazing holdout. They get dragged down a bit in here by in terms of their relative strength, that is, when I say amazing holdout. And this is a hot area still. Supply and elasticity meets rising demand. These are secular bull markets. I think oil is overextended, as you know, but it hasn't broken down. First sign of pattern deterioration would be a close under 130 that held for more than a day or two. Convincing evidence of a medium-term correction would be a close under 120, as I've said, for a number of for several weeks now as well. Get a close under 120, and I wouldn't be surprised to see crude go back to at least $100, and that would change the outlook for stock markets fairly considerably. Among the again, I maintain though that crude oil is in that long-term secular bull market, so I'm only talking about a medium-term correction. Same thing for natural gas, a long-term secular bull market. Now, among these other commodities, what about the metals? Precious metals, this is not a strong seasonal period for them because we don't have the buying ahead of Christmas, the buying ahead of the Chinese New Year, or the buying ahead of the Indian wedding season. And the latter two of those occur early in the New Year, and the Christmas buying, of course, occurs at year end. So it's a dull period for the precious metals seasonally, but they are firm in here, and they could, well, they've been tracking oil here recently. I wrote about this yesterday. I said this is a movable feast in terms of what they track, but I do feel that one sh investors should really have a representation in gold. The conservative way to do it is via the bullion funds. I bought back that gold that I sold yesterday. I bought it back a little lower in here today. For instance, just going to have a cough and a drink. Excuse me just a sec. Okay. Back again, the industrial metals. I mentioned that a number of them were firmer. Copper, with the help of what I think is that industrial action in Peru, the major copper producer, has been pushing up on a daily basis here. It's back up to 380.245, so it's moving in on the higher side of its overall trading range. The backwardation is widening, and that's potentially quite important. Owen and I felt for a very long time that this was a huge continuation pattern rather than a top area, and that it would eventually break upwards once again. If it does do that, that would ignite further interest in the rest of the sector. That would be good for the miners, of course, as well. Potash prices remain very, very firm. I'm posting some minor metal charts here today. That won't make a big difference for the miners, but it just shows right across the sector, you have strength more often than not. And where you don't, the markets are pretty bombed out. The three bombed out candidates being nickel, zinc, and lead. Now, so I again I feel the whole supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme is very, very much in force here. In terms of long-term secular themes, global infrastructure development, this is going to run and run and run. A lot of people are saying that, well, China, there isn't going to be much more building after the Olympics. Well, that's just Beijing. There's buildings going on throughout vast sections of the country. And then there'll be the Sichuan rebuilding following all that earthquake demand damage. And that is a massive rebuilding task. I'm convinced that the incoming US administration, almost inevitably the Obama administration, will be goosing the US economy with a massive infrastructure spending, and it certainly needs it. They've got this taking place all over the world, in the Middle East, in South America. Sorry, I've got a very tickly throat here. I'm going to cough again. Fortunately, nearly at the end of this audio run. So that's a hugely important theme that ties in with the resources they are reinforcing. And for instance, as China and India build their infrastructure, you get and other countries build their infrastructure, the countries that supply those raw materials do so well. A number of those are developing countries such as Brazil. So their economy booms due to the demand for their resources, both metals and foods and energy. And that gives them the capital to go in for the infrastructure building. So this is going to run and run and run, as I've said. That doesn't mean that those shares or stock markets always perform. Of course not. We know how volatile they are, but they are going to remain an absolutely key sector. What about China and India? Well, those are the biggest disappointments and poorest performers in my portfolio, and I am a big bull of those for the very, very long term. I think while central banks are so concerned about inflation, then we are not going to see them really performing. China's the more oversold of the two, and may well be the first to recover. But I regard both as being in buying ranges, although I appreciate that it takes a brave person to buy in here right now. I will be buying for some trades quite soon. Just waiting for a little bit more evidence that we've reached a climactic low that will hold for at least the medium term. And but I'll do that through my spread betting account. So what I'm trying to say is this is a much better time to be buying than selling, even if we only get a bear market rally where bear markets are in evidence. And I think that's pretty much it. I hope I haven't left any crucial bases untouched that are of interest to you. So it's been a tough week. I hope you are doing something really relaxing and fun and enjoyable over the weekend. I am, not to create envy among opera lovers, but I've got Ariadne off Naxos at the Royal Opera House tomorrow night and Eugene Onegin at Glyndebourne on Sunday. So that will have me all rested and recuperated and raring to go by Monday, I trust. Meanwhile, all the very best to all of you.